This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 14th of November 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 13th of November 2014, which has this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Richard Martin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: location named for new £150 million hospital. Government minister's criticism for Silver Hill. And frontline city police to go in latest cuts. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Location named for the new £150 million hospital. A new 150 million critical treatment hospital is set to be built in North Waltham, it was revealed on Monday. The 24-hour consultant-led centre will be based at a greenfield site between Winchester and Basingstoke on the north side of the A30 near junction 7 of the M3. As previously reported, the site is expected to cost around £150 million to develop, which will be built by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, referred to in the future in the article here as HHFT, alongside an £18.5 million cancer centre, of which £5 million will need to be fundraised. It was one of two options considered following months of consultations. The second option, rejected by HHFT, was to build on the existing site of Basingstoke Hospital in Aldermaston Road. Mary Edwards, chief executive of HHFT, said it was the best solution to provide for the population, which will serve from Eastleigh to Newbury and over to Hook. "We choose this site because it is the shortest possible ambulance time for our whole population," she said. "The site is very easily accessible, and we worked in conjunction with the ambulance crews, the CCG, and others to make sure this is the best possible site. Through that work, it has been clear we are all agreed on a central location." The specialist emergency department is designed to deal with what Mrs. Edwards called the blue light scenario, to treat patients with major trauma injuries, heart attacks, strokes, and other emergencies. Mrs. Edwards said, "Only the most seriously injured patients will be treated at the critical treatment hospital. The general rule will be that patients will take themselves to their emergency departments at Winchester and Basingstoke, which will remain open, but patients will be taken by ambulance to the critical treatment hospital. Midwife-led maternity centres will still operate at Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals," she said, "with the exception of high-risk mothers, many of whom are expected to choose to deliver at the new centre. It is hoped the Trust's 24-hour labour line, the first of its kind in the country, will help a great deal in an emergency situation, which is manned by experienced midwives. Midwives are very clever and very capable," she said. In the olden days, one would call the labour ward. The difference is now a very experienced midwife is on the phone, and they then advise on what to do, and for the very small number who don't even notice they are in labour, they will put their hands up and get taken to the most appropriate place. There will not be women giving birth on the motorway. Women will have a full range of choices about where to give birth. Mrs. Edwards added that staff for the new centre will be extracted from current services depending on their area of expertise. Intensive therapy unit, the ITU, their nurses will be expected to relocate to the hospitals, whereas consultants will rotate across the sites. It is quite important for us to remind people that 85% of services will still be delivered in Winchester and Basingstoke, so most patients will still go to their local hospital, even in an emergency or planned operation, she said. A pre-planning application will be submitted over the next couple of weeks to Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council, with a full planning application submitted in March, followed by a public consultation. The tender for the work should be completed by next November, and Monitor will then be invited to approve the plans. Building work is expected to start in 2016 to open in autumn 2018. Mrs. Edwards added that various areas of Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals are expected to become redundant with the opening of the new hospital. She said, "We have been speaking with the RHCH about potential options for the site, which could benefit the community, for example, elderly care facilities. There's still a lot to be decided, but this is a very exciting time for us." Winchester and Chandler's Ward MP Steve Bryan, an active campaigner on local and national health issues, said, "This could be very exciting for us. A world-class NHS facility with 24/7 consultant can cover, something we don't have right now in Winchester, and a modern district hospital, general hospital, at the RHCH. Nobody in their right mind, listening to the strong clinical case being made, should dismiss the new hospital out of hand. And I certainly do not, because the NHS has to be about securing the very best outcomes for us when we are acutely unwell. There are many questions that remain, such as travel connections to the site and the implications for complex births. But we should also remember this facility is a long way from being realised as things stand today."
Government ministers' criticism for Silver Hill, but city's Tory leader accuses him of scoring political points. A government minister has criticised plans to drop affordable housing from Winchester's Silver Hill scheme. Liberal Democrat Lord Newby, deputy government chief whip in the House of Lords, said outpricing families on modest incomes could turn housing in the city centre into the preserve of the rich. Developer Henderson was allowed to drop 100 affordable homes and a bus station from its £150 million plans to redevelop part of the city centre. Speaking ahead of a recent constituency association dinner, Lord Newby said, "How many chances do you get in a year to build affordable housing in this city? We can't have a situation where really the only people who can afford to live in the centre are the rich. It's just not good for a balanced and fair community." Henderson has now pledged a minimum of £1 million towards affordable housing elsewhere in the city, rising to £2 million if Silver Hill turns a 15% profit. Lord Newby said it could afford more than this. Council leader Rob Humby said Lord Newby was poorly advised and should know the facts before criticising. In a letter to the minister, seen by the Hampshire Chronicle, Councillor Humby accused him of making political points out of Silver Hill without understanding the scheme's details. He said, "This is a difficult brownfield site which brings with it high costs, and we must be realistic in moving it forward. It is better to have a workable scheme which involves some compromise than be naively over-ambitious and get nothing. I am afraid you have either been misled over this scheme or are seeking to make political points without taking time to understand what is proposed at Silver Hill. Perhaps I should not be surprised, given you were on a flying visit to attend a political dinner. Should you want to visit me and my officers at the City Council at any time to hear about the facts on Silver Hill, we would be delighted to see you. I'll be sure to send some directions." Councillor Humby added that the homes covered by Henderson's contribution would include social housing in the heart of the city.
Frontline City Police to go in latest cuts. Frontline policing in Winchester will suffer a serious blow as officers revealed that the sale of the city's police station will be followed by dozens of job cuts. Last week, the Chronicle reported that North Wall Station is set to close, with its officers and backroom staff moving to other city bases. But cuts to frontline and backroom staff will follow shortly after, it was confirmed on Tuesday, with constables, response officers and detectives all leaving in the next few years. It comes less than a week after police said the North Wall sale would not affect staff numbers or service. Nobody will lose their jobs when the base closes, but the same round of cuts will take dozens of staff out of the city. Winchester Chief Inspector Darius Hemetpour said that the district will lose 10 response and patrol officers and 4 police constables, gaining 4 PCSOs in their place, as Hampshire Constabulary cuts £25 million from its budget by 2016. 20 detectives and investigative staff at Winchester CID will move to Basingstoke before learning how many of their number will be cut. Police told Tuesday's Neighbourhood Watch meeting that, where possible, job losses would come by not replacing staff as they leave. Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes said around 130 staff retire or relocate every year in Hampshire. Government budget cuts have forced Hampshire Constabulary to find £80 billion in savings since 2010, with another comprehensive review expected after next year's general election. Mr. Hayes said that selling off buildings like North Walls will save £5 million, money which would otherwise have been taken from the budget through around 600 job losses. Assistant Chief Constable David Pride told the Chronicle that he expected 1,000 jobs, half of which will be frontline staff, to be lost across the county in the next two rounds of cuts, including around 100 in Winchester. "We've got nowhere else to go," he said. "It's not going to implode. We're trying to do things differently. The status quo will not remain. It can't." Inspector Hemetpour said the restructure allowed him to draft officers from other areas to handle specific incidents. He added that savings targets cannot be determined beyond 2016 until after the general election, but he expects more cuts will, which, like the latest round, will hurt.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Fensom, Martin Leslie Fensom, on the 5th of November at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 66. Lewis, Kathleen Mary Lewis, on the 29th of October, just one day before her 89th birthday. Mantell, Bernard William Mantell, on the 2nd of November. Murray, Alistair Murray, on the 2nd of November, age 69. Pullen, Grace Pullen, on the 31st of October, aged 94. And next we have Christian comment.
And this week it is written by Roland Ream, and he's entitled it, "Remembering is Only the Half of It." The debate about keeping the ceramic poppies at the Tower of London has been settled. Key parts of the display will stay a while longer and then go on tour. Public demand outweighed the artist's original intention for the installation to come down and be sold off straight after Remembrance Day. There's no doubt that the sea of poppies has captured the public mood. The sight is too beautiful to be a reminder of the brutality of war, but their spread suggests the sheer scale of loss, which is both poignant and sobering. The poppies have also provided many people with an opportunity to remember family members they never knew, whose names have been read out at sunset at the tower from the Roll of Honour. But what has struck such a chord with the millions who have seen it? It's not simply the opportunity to remember, if this means just recalling the events of 100 years ago. There must be many who have visited the tower with a hazy view of the actual history. Rather, what the poppies are offering is an opportunity to imagine. To imagine the sacrifice of so many, and to think of each as a beautiful life cut short. There's no shame in imagining as we remember. It's impossible just to rerun the past, as if we could simply wind back the videotape of events. We look back imaginatively to go forward with hope. There are many examples of this sort of creative remembering, even in the Bible. For example, there are significant differences between historical reconstruction of Israel's departure from Egypt and the famous story of the Exodus, with Moses parting the waters of the Red Sea. However, it was that story, remembered and imagined, which inspired the people of Israel to believe that one day, once again, God would free them from exile. And so he did. Imagination turns to fantasy and less rooted in history. But when imagination builds on memory, the result can be powerful, putting the past in service for the future. How well can those who remember long-lost and never-known relatives recall the past? It is enough for them to remember their sacrifice and imagine the cost to those closest to them. In the silences of remembrance, we can all imagine the past and how to work for a future worthy of them.
Next, we move on to the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've 10 letters today on a variety of topics, some of which, of course, have been covered on previous weeks.
And this first letter has been copiously covered on previous weeks, and you'll see why in a second. It's from Councillor Kim Gottlieb. Campaign gathers momentum. Sir, the Silver Hill public consultation in the Winchester Deserves Better campaign, arranged at the Wessex Hotel last week, was attended by well over 300 folk from across the district. The main purpose of the discussion days was to find out how residents thought the site might be developed instead of how currently proposed. It was a fascinating exercise, and we have gathered a lot of very carefully considered thoughts, many of which were from some very qualified individuals with professional experience in relevant industries. We will collate the responses to a questionnaire we produced and make the information available as soon as possible. But thoughts that were common include the provision of an indoor market and that of a proper bus station. The council would have been in a position to take on board and to act on such thoughts if it had not discarded on August the 6th the negotiating strength it had via the absolute discretion conditions set out in the development agreement. Also in the development agreement is a financial viability condition. Henderson made clear their inability to meet the affordable housing commitment set out in the 2009 Section 106 agreement, and it's likely that the council could have terminated the contract without any penalty because of the developer's breach of the financial viability condition. Then, having had the opportunity to properly consult with the public and then to update the 2003 planning brief, the opportunity could have been put out into the open market. There would have been a queue of developers around the block. When you consider that the current proposal has been on the table for barely a year, in the context of a scheme that has taken 10-plus years to come to fruition, it is possible that that opportunity will come by again, and I hope that next time the council doesn't fluff it. That's from Councillor Kim Gottlieb Avington.
This letter from Jean Eagles suggests that pensioners will suffer from bus cuts. Sir, having read the report of cuts to weekend and evening bus services in Hampshire as from next April in the Hampshire Chronicle, October 30th, I can only assume the culprit, Transport boss Sean Woodward, is not retired or ever travelled on a public bus. By cutting 30 minutes from the present time that pensioners are allowed to start using their bus passes, it makes a whole lot of difference in getting to surgeries, outpatients departments and clinics, etc. What a pity Mr. Woodward could not make the cuts of £1.2 million by cutting council staff salaries and, most of all, councillors' expenses. I expect the Tory council will have further surprises up their sleeves when, after the next general election, they get rid of bus passes altogether, as they usually are so kind to the old and poor alike. What a pity this year's pantomime at the Theatre Royal is not A Christmas Carol, as I would choose the perfect person to play Scrooge. Jean Eagles, Brussey Road, Winchester.
It's time for a King Alfred Park, writes Bill Hode. Sir, the recent note from Steve Tilbury to members of Save the Wreck has potentially encouraging news. Quote, the only option being considered further for North Walls is a rebuild on the area already occupied by the leisure centre and its curtilage, along with options at Bar End and refurbishment of the existing facility. End of quote. In the light of the above, could we now further investigate the possibility of changing the name of the park from the North Walls Recreation Ground, which to say the least lacks glamour, to King Alfred Park? This would bring the area more in line with the former mayor's wishes. Alfred Bowker was his name, who in the conclusion of his 1901 address, which was given at Hyde Abbey, simply stated the following. The Corporation of Winchester were now acquiring from Mr. Barrow Simmons 35 acres for the purpose of a public park, which included a portion of the site of the abbey. Major Barker further ventured to hope the city would find it advisable to name the proposed new park after the great king who was buried there. This would be a memento of the present occasion, in bracket the King Alfred millenary celebrations, and a worthy memorial to remind future generations of good accomplished by the present inhabitants of Winchester. Perhaps now, after 113 years, Mayor Bowker's vision would become a reality. Bill Hode, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Chris Sparks says City's remembrance was a poor show. Sir, with this being the 100th year since the First World War, I, along with my family, went to the cathedral on Sunday in respect for those who have fallen in conflicts over the years. My two oldest grandchildren have been learning about what the poppy means and why, so I thought I would take them to see the remembrance service. It was so sad that Winchester could not make more of an effort this year, apart from the military marching. The only other thing to see was the councillors and justices walking up the High Street. Could our councillors not have organised something more fitting for this year, military on horseback, dressed in the uniform of the day, a release of racing pigeons at some point, and a band. Yet there was nothing. Only the service at the cathedral. How do you explain to 5- and 8-year-olds what is going on when they can't see anything, as those in the cathedral service blocked the view so the grandchildren could not see the service outside on a big screen? A very poor show from Winchester, a cathedral city and once the capital. So writes Chris Sparks, Alsford Road, Winchester.
Councillor Peter Edgar says, no loophole in Westgate planning. Sir, I was compelled to respond to the letter going against their own policies, Chronicle of October the 9th. Mr. Benzie calls into question enforcement of one of the planning conditions for the development of the Westgate School, suggesting there has been a loophole. I can assure him there is none, and we refute any suggestion of deceit. The highway works in Chilbolton Avenue were due to take place during the summer school holiday period to be completed for the start of the autumn term. Unfortunately, we had to restart the tender process because none were returned by the deadline. We advised Mr. Benzie that this delay to the works was not in breach of the conditions, since the building works on the school site were not complete, having been delayed due to complications in completing the groundworks earlier in the year. To avoid any disruption to the start of reception pupils' education at the Westgate, while work to complete construction of the new primary school continued, we implemented a contingency plan to provide a high-quality, modular classrooms for which planning permission is not required. I fully appreciate local concerns about safety, and the current highways improvement works, which started on October the 27th, are being carried out during off-peak periods only so as to avoid the start and end of the school day. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, Hampshire County Council.
David Hughes says that the new limit adds to traffic congestion. Sir, from what I have seen, the new speed limits have only added to the traffic congestion in Winchester, so I cannot see that helping pollution levels, despite what Councillor Pines might think. In any event, this ill-conceived speed limit would appear to offer little safety benefit. I understand that a recent analysis of government data by the Institute of Advanced Motorists shows that there was a 26% increase in serious accidents on 20-mile-per-hour roads last year and a 17% increase in slight accidents. The increase of casualties on these restricted roads was 29% for serious casualties and 19% for slight casualties. Perhaps we need a person walking in front of us waving a red flag. David Hughes, Downloads Way, South Wanston.
Andrea Owen asks, is there any truth in this rumour? Sir, I have heard that Winchester City Council is to issue calf-length rubber boots to all residents, only one pair per household, who can prove they have a need to walk in the area between St Cross Road, the River, St Cross and St Swithin's Street. Those using Kingsgate Road will be given priority. This is so that they can cross the pavements and roads which are now a mush of uncollected leaves. Is there any truth in this rumour? Or is it just a joke, like the street cleaning which we're supposed to receive for our council tax payments? That letter is from Andrea Owen, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And back to a familiar theme, with Rod Youngman writing about a lesson for Silver Hill. So last October I visited Northampton and noticed that the dank and dreary bus station was scheduled for closure. This month I was in Northampton again. The old bus station has now closed, and nearby is a new, smart bus station incorporating retail units, which no doubt help to pay for its upkeep. A lesson for our new development in Winchester? Rod Youngman, Cromwell Road, Stanmore.
Mums and babies deserve better, says Jackie Porter. I feel I must reply to last week's letter from the hospital consultant, Michael Hurd. The Hampshire's Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust has three maternity units and a community midwife service. There are 3,000 babies born a year in Winchester and just under that in Basingstoke. Mums at both have access to obstetric and paediatric services. A midwife-only led unit at Andover struggles to attract 200 births a year. There are conflicting reports about the efficacy of midwife-only units. Midwives in Winchester tell me the facts, that mothers just don't have the confidence to use a midwife-only unit, and most will opt for the hospital, where is full backup for mother and baby. First-time mums especially go for this option. There won't be backup for mother or baby at Winchester if the Trust's plan goes ahead. At present, the doctor comes to them. Under the new arrangements, a mother whose labour or baby is in difficulty will be transferred by ambulance to the new hospital. I don't think this is a good enough service for a community where 3,000 babies are born every year. Our mums and babies deserve a better deal. Many midwives and parents agree and have signed up with me to register their objection to this plan. I understand the financial considerations for the clinicians wanting to move to a new hospital, but the arguments don't work for mums and their babies. We must retain a service with full access to midwives, paediatricians and obstetricians at Winchester. Jackie Porter, County Councillor, and prospective Liberal Democrat MP for Winchester and Chancellorsford.
These homes are not affordable, writes Pip Billington. Sir, the UK average salary is £26,500. So let's imagine we have a two-income household on the UK average. The typical multiple to calculate a mortgage is 3 times salary. So our so-called average household could borrow £159,000. Assume by some miracle they had managed to save up a £10,000 deposit. They have £169,000 to spend, but let's not forget the transactions costs, which will set them back about £15,000, so we are back down to £154,000. If you want to know what that buys within 1 mile of SO22 and SO23, the answer is a tiny one-bed flat or a mobile home. Don't forget that that is assuming 2 average incomes, which many households will not achieve. So let's stop using this utterly meaningless term of affordable housing. Even if you discounted Winchester house prices by 50%, it would not be affordable for most people. We are getting plenty of good debate about Silver Hill and Barton Farm, but the issues get muddled by the cry for affordable housing, which, although a lovely idea, is sadly a nonsense. If, as a city, we want a healthy, mixed community of people with a wide range of incomes, we must build a large stock of council housing and keep it in the public sector where it can't be snapped up by landlords looking for an easy buck from students. That letter is from Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
That concludes the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. And now we have some items of historical interest from the earlier editions of the Hampshire Chronicle. So we have items from 200 years, 100 years, 50 years ago and 25 years ago. So we'll start with the item from 200 years ago.
And this is from November the 14th, 1814. A gentleman's gardener in the neighbourhood of Manchester last spring threw up a potato with his spade, and his master put it into his top coat pocket. The coat was shortly after hung up in a closet, where it remained until a few days ago. The owner found the potato, spelt with an E at the end, by the way, which he had so long ago deposited there, had vegetated and sent out shoots of several inches long, and had produced leaves and young potatoes sufficiently perfect to become one of the greatest curiosities in germination of which we have ever heard.
A hundred years ago, November the 14th, 1914, tribute to gallant British troops. Paris, November the 8th. The Temps publishes from a French eyewitness a remarkable tribute to the admirable gallantry of the British troops engaged in the Battle of Flanders. It was their difficult mission, he says, to bar the road to the new German invasion between Ypres and La Bassée. To accomplish it, they had to hold the trenches for several weeks in face of an enemy which was not only superior in number, but which also attacked with the resolution of despair. In many places at the beginning of this new battle, the English lines were so thin that without the display of a stubbornness worthy of a Waterloo, they were in danger, if not of being broken, at least of being driven back in perilous conditions. Nevertheless, they held on. And a second bit of news. After a comparative lull for over a week, Winchester has begun to resume what has come to be normal activity in matters military. In addition to the number of recruits coming up for Kitchener's army, and there were more arriving in 2 days this week than arrived during the whole of last week, the city has welcomed troops from foreign service, several battalions reaching here on Sunday after a journey of some 14,000 miles. Animated scenes were witnessed at the station throughout the afternoon and the evening.
Now 50 years ago, November the 14th, 1964, third operating theatre to be built. A third operating theatre at a cost of up to £40,000 is to be built during the coming financial year at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. This decision was reached recently by the Wessex Regional Hospital Board. At the moment, the proposed new theatre is in the planning stage, and a site has yet to be found adjoining or near to the present hospital. The work is expected to take 18 months and will relieve pressure on the two theatres already being used.
And from 25 years ago, November the 17th, 1989... exhaust risks highlighted. The dangers caused by vehicle exhaust, even with unleaded petrol, were highlighted by members of Winchester Friends of the Earth on Saturday. The Friends of the Earth took part in a nationally coordinated campaign to show that the problem of air pollution from motor vehicles is far from over now that unleaded petrol has caught on.
That concludes the historical items. Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by a first-person comment.
Christmas is just around the corner. Winchester's festive lights were switched on today, Thursday, and the city's ice rink and market will open next Thursday. The spirit of Christmas is building momentum, and excited children begin to look forward to a visit from Santa on the big day. But for many children across the Winchester district, Christmas Day will be much like any other. These are the children of families who rely on help from local charities, like Winchester's Basics Bank, Home Start Winchester, and Friends of the Family. That's why the Hampshire Chronicle is proud to launch its Christmas toy appeal this week. We're asking our generous readers to once again spare a thought for a disadvantaged child while you're out and about doing your Christmas shopping this year. Hundreds of presents were donated to our appeal last year, and we're hoping to do it even better this year. Full details of how you can put a smile on a children's face this Christmas will be given in an article which we will read later.
First person this week is written by Judith Hennigan. and she entitles it Juggling That Work-Life Balance. Sometimes I feel like the Cat in the Hat. Don't get me wrong, I'm lucky enough to love my job, but the multitasking lives many of us lead are a bit of a circus act. Look, I can brush my teeth while working through my inbox. See, I'm helping my son fill out his UCAS form while vacuuming the stairs. Goodness, I can do my Pilates exercises and complete my tax return while sitting in a meeting. Well, OK, not the Pilates. My wise and tolerant children recite snippets of Dr. Seuss. The Cat in the Hat beats me every time, of course. I don't have the poise to stand on a ball with a book in one hand and a bat on my hat with a cup and a cake and a fish and a little toy ship and some milk on a dish. But then the Cat in the Hat did make a humongous mess. What I do instead is create a daily list. The items marked urgent or if you do not complete you will self-destruct in 10 seconds usually get ticked off, but strangely it's always the same things that are carried over. These are the items that aren't work-related or bound by a publisher's deadline, but sit quietly, patiently, waiting for a modicum of attention that may never come. Please clean the cooker. Go and start that novel. Plan an afternoon out with my youngest. Take a boat to Patagonia. Visit that neighbour. Make that decision about how best to downsize or maybe just climb St. Catherine's Hill one night to gaze up at the stars. Often, this issue of priorities, encountered by so many of us on a daily basis, is pigeonholed as a casualty of the work-life balance and consigned, like so much else, to the nether regions of the list. We sigh and shrug and say, well, what can we do? And nothing changes. I sleep fitfully with my list under my pillow and wake up to find we're already halfway through this season's X Factor Strictly Marathon and the big Christmas ads are premiering on the telly. Meanwhile, my four children grow up, leave home. Patagonia drifts westwards. Doctor Who ends, the cooker blows up, and someone else writes my novel. So, this is my last column for the Hampshire Chronicle for a while. It has been a pleasure and a privilege to take up this space alongside my fellow columnists, but I need to turn my list the right way round and start again. My youngest daughter and I may travel by boat to Patagonia and eat potatoes and beans around a campfire. I may write that novel. Or perhaps I'll just take a walk over St. Catherine's Hill to gaze up at the stars.
There are no special announcements this week, but a few items of what's going to be happening may be of interest to you. On Sunday, the 30th of November, is the Farmers Market in Winchester on Middlebrook Street and the car park. The following Sunday, that's the 7th of December, there's an antiques and collectibles market. And then the following Sunday, the 14th of December, there is the Art, Design and Antiques Fair, all held around Middlebrook Street. There is a lecture at the Discovery Centre in Jury Street on Wednesday of next week, that's the 19th, at 7:30, about the trench coat. It's tied in to the exhibition that they currently have at the Discovery Centre about trench coats and items associated with the First World War. So that's at the Discovery Centre at 7:30 on Wednesday, the 19th of November, and the cost is £5. And on Thursday, the 20th of November, there is a performance of Elgar's Dream of Gerontius at the Cathedral at 7:30, given by the Winchester Music Club. And tickets for that can be obtained from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. So that's the Dream of Gerontius by Elgar at the Cathedral on Thursday, the 20th of November at 7:30. Talking about Christmas, which is not very far away, a reminder, if you need it, that the Christmas market in the Winchester Cathedral Inner Close will open on Thursday, November the 20th, and will continue until Sunday, the 21st of December. And the opening hours are Sunday to Wednesday, 10:30 to 6, Thursday to Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. And also the ice rink will be there. The ice rink will continue until Sunday, the 4th of January. And also to get you in the Christmas mood, some advance information about the various pantomimes that are being presented in the area. At the Theatre Royal in Winchester, they're doing the Sleeping Beauty. The dates are from Thursday, the 9th of December, until Sunday, the 4th of January. Tickets, times, I think you should obtain from the Winchester, from the Royal, the Theatre Royal box office, 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. In Romsey, at the Plaza Theatre, they're presenting Dick Whittington. That's from Thursday the 8th of January until Saturday the 24th of January. Still quite a long way ahead. But if you're interested, contact the Plaza Theatre in Romsey. I'm afraid that they don't give a telephone number for that. And then in Basingstoke at the Anvil, they're doing Cinderella. And that will be on from Thursday the 11th of December until Sunday the 4th of January. Various times and tickets, and sadly again they don't appear to have provided the telephone number for that, but I'm sure you can get that from directory inquiries for both the Palace Theatre in Romsey and the Anvil in Basingstoke. Lighting up times today, Friday the 14th of November, the sun rose at 20 past 7 this morning, though it wasn't particularly visible given the torrential rain that was coming down at the time, and will set at 20 past 4 in the afternoon. Wednesday of next week, the 19th of November, sun rises at 7:30 in the morning and sunset at 4:15 in the afternoon. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have any problems with your memory sticks or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. There's a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now move on to items of general news interest, and we will start with the information about the Hampshire Chronicle's Christmas appeal.
And this is headed, "Put a smile on a child's face this Christmas." The Hampshire Chronicle is once again asking its generous readers to put a smile on the face of a needy local child this Christmas. The Chronicle's Christmas Toy Appeal aims to help children of people going through difficult times. Last year's appeal was so successful that we're widening our campaign to help three Winchester charities this time round. Along with Winchester Basics Bank, two other worthy causes, Friends of the Family and Home Start Winchester, will also benefit. The appeal hopes to collect new toys for a special Santa delivery to youngsters seen by the charities who may otherwise have little or nothing under the tree this festive season. The Basics Bank helps families in B&B accommodation, women fleeing domestic violence, the newly unemployed waiting for benefits to start, and people who have found work but are between benefits ending and wages starting. Centre manager Francis Rogers said, "We're extremely grateful to the Chronicle for once again including Basics Bank as a recipient of their toy appeal this year. We have links with both Friends of the Family and Home Start Winchester, so are delighted that the presents will be shared between the three charities. I'd like to thank Chronicle readers in advance on behalf of our centre users for their generosity." Home Start Winchester and District is one of 340 schemes within the National Home Start movement each of which is an independent charity which supports families in local communities. Home Start Winchester and District aim is to offer free support to families with at least one child under five going through difficult times, which may include loneliness and isolation, coping with twins, triplets or several preschool children, ill health, disability and special needs, relationship difficulties, lone parenting, first-time parenthood and new babies, or behavioural problems. Its services are provided by a team of trained volunteers who work in close collaboration with local children's centres and the 10 other Home Start schemes in Hampshire. Anne McPherson, Senior Coordinator for Home Start Winchester, said the charity was delighted to be included. She said, "Christmas should be a joyous time for families, but when money is tight, it can become a struggle. This lovely idea will make such a difference to the families we support." Friends of the Family is a small, independent, Winchester-based charity which has offered confidential support to local families in difficulty for 20 years. Among the services it provides is a mums and toddlers group for preschool-aged children when home life is challenging. The group benefits from a psychotherapist, trained children's play leader, and a team of volunteers. A dad support group gives confidential help to men with children aged up to five who are struggling with their roles as a parent and experiencing challenges within their family environment. The charity also provides at-home support for families with children aged 5 to 13. So, now, further details of where to donate your presents. The Chronicle has teamed up with the Brooks Centre in Winchester this year so that presents can be easily donated in a convenient, secure, central location. Due to a lack of space, the Chronicle cannot accept any donations at its own office. Liz Marsden of the Brooks Marketing, Events and Administration team said the Brooks Shopping Centre is delighted to be able to support the Hampshire Chronicle this year in collecting donated children's gifts for its toy appeal. Waterstones, which is situated on the upper shopping level within the centre, is the first step in and provide a collection point in each shop. Other stores will follow suit as the donations come in, which will help store the goodies before they're collected and make sure they're securely received. Keith Redbourne, editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, said, "We're delighted to run this popular appeal again following the phenomenal success of last year's campaign. We are hugely grateful to the Brooks for kindly offering to collect donated presents. Without their generous support, 2014's Christmas toy appeal wouldn't be possible. Only brand new toys are wanted and should be dropped off, unwrapped, at the Waterston store in the Brooks only from this Saturday, November the 15th, until Friday, December the 12th. Readers are free to donate any toys suitable for boys and girls aged from toddlers to 13 years old. All donated presents will be divided between the three chosen charities in time for Christmas."
Trust takes over council's cultural venues. A new trust that promises to make Hampshire a world-class cultural hub now has the keys to council-owned museums, galleries and arts centres. Hampshire Cultural Trust has taken over the operation and funding of all venues in a bid to boost visitor numbers. Buildings, assets and collections belonging to Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council are now leased to it. This will safeguard the long-term future of Hampshire's cultural venues for future generations and save money by placing responsibility for all sites under one charitable trust. It will be able to generate additional investment and gain access to external grants and donations, reducing dependency on local authority funding. Janet Owen, Executive Officer of Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "Our aim is to build on the fantastic success of what is already on our doorstep and elevate our portfolio into something world-class that has the power to transform lives."
Lest we forget. first Remembrance Sunday of the First World War centenary is an emotional day of reflection and recognition of those killed in all conflicts. Hundreds of residents, veterans and military families fell silent at Winchester Cathedral on Sunday to remember the war dead. A packed congregation escaped the cold to fill the cathedral for the first Remembrance Sunday of the First World War centenary, led by the Dean, the Very Reverend James Atwell. He was joined on an emotional morning by dignitaries, including the Bishop of Winchester, Tim Dakin, the new Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, Hampshire County Council Chairman, Councillor Colin Davidovitz, and mayors of Winchester, past and present. In a moving sermon, Army Chaplain Reverend Duncan Weaver reflected on the sacrifice of military families, urging humility in remembrance and warning against the glorification of war. He said, "It is really important in our fast-paced, individualistic nation that we look back, we remember, and we reflect. What does it mean to live in the light of those lives given? It should always give us hope that we can make a difference."
Winchester bonfire and torchlit procession. They came in their thousands for an event that has lit up Winchester's winter social calendar for more than 50 years and raised money for local causes. Despite the threat of rain, some 20,000 people turned up to the 56th annual Winchester bonfire and fireworks last Saturday, following the torchlit procession up the High Street. River Park was crowded as families and friends gathered to see the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, light the 30-foot bonfire. Over the pumping pop music, the audience was told it took 20 people a day to build. In fact, it was so big it took longer to burn than anticipated, and the fireworks were delayed by 15 minutes. Not that anyone minded, it was quite a sight. The fireworks got off to a sparkling start as "Diamonds Are Forever" blared over the speakers and children squealed in excitement. The sound of thousands of little ones singing along to Disney's Frozen soundtrack mid-display was heartwarming, and some parents even joined in. The event is put on by Winchester Roundtable and raises money for local causes. This year the bucket collections raised £2,480 alone for Winchester Church's night shelter, which offers an essential lifeline for people in crisis. This year £40,000 was raised from ticket sales and donations. Bonfire Chairman Roger Jones of the Roundtable said it was very special. "I took a moment, stood at the corner of Jury Street and North Walls, and thought, this is what it's all about. On top of the ticket sales, we gave 900 out to charities and the people they help. We wanted them to come along, and I hope they enjoyed it. We had songs for all age groups, and it's about connecting with people and giving them what they want. People said it made them happy, and that's the kind of detail we want to connect with." Money raised from the event will be distributed in due course via the Hampshire Chronicle-backed Cash for Causes scheme. And the article comes surrounded by three photographs, one of people lighting torches on the High Street, another of procession and people playing their instruments on the High Street, and indeed an enormous bonfire.
Blunder over new homes. Winchester civic chiefs blundered over the proposed development for the elderly on a city car park site. Councillor Robert Saunders said the council had made errors in briefing architects over the extra care scheme proposed for Chesil Street car park. He told the Overview and Scrutiny Committee that the original architect's brief took no account of the site being in a conservation area. The scheme was for a five-storey, quote, shed, unquote. "We realised we had made a mistake in not briefing the architects properly, and we will be going back to the drawing board in that respect," he said. Councillor Victoria Weston, portfolio holder for Built Environment, said the proposal had been scaled back from 58 flats to 52. She said the city's conservation watchdogs backed the plans. Meanwhile, The committee heard the council believe it is making good progress in tackling the shortage of affordable homes in the district. Nearly 200 new homes are in the pipeline, said Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for Housing Services. 80 will be built at the 200-home scheme at Pitt Manor. 52 are earmarked for the extra care scheme for the elderly proposed at Chesil Street, 27 at Victoria House in Hyde, 21 on the site of the new Queen's Head in Stanmore, and 12 at Westman Road in Wick.
Teen died after jumping in front of freight train. A teenager died after jumping in front of a high-speed freight train at Winchester Railway Station, an inquest heard. Edwin Pierce, known as Eddie, died instantly in the collision on February the 7th this year. Senior Central Hampshire Coroner Graham Short concluded at last Wednesday's hearing that the 18-year-old's recent resignation from a job at Age Concern Hampshire was a contributory factor in the youngster's thought processes. Statements by the Freightliner Group Limited drivers, which were read to the inquest, told how they applied the emergency brake as soon as they spotted Eddie that Friday afternoon, but it was impossible to avoid him due to their speed. A post-mortem examination concluded that he died of multiple injuries. The court heard how Eddie of Western Road, Winchester, suffered from compulsive behaviour and suicidal thoughts, telling one therapist, "I just don't think living is for me." He was unsettled by his parents' separation and had been violent toward his mother. Caroline Ferguson described how her son was a desperately ill young person, adding that two of his uncles had died young by taking their own lives. She said, in the 16 months before he died, he had contact with a mental health professional for less than 10 hours. Mrs. Ferguson challenged psychiatrist Dr. Ravi Thiagarajan about the standard of mental health care Eddie had received. "I begged you for help, and you said you couldn't help me." Eddie started a year-long business apprenticeship at Age Concern's offices in St. Cross Road, Winchester, in December 2013. But the hearing was told how he resigned from the post after just a month, after concerns were raised about his performance. He tried several days later to retract the resignation, launching a grievance procedure about his treatment by the charity just before his death. His father, Jeremy Pierce, said he was pressurised into writing that letter. Age Concern Hampshire Chief Executive Officer Richard Smith said the amount of support Eddie needed was very high. He said, "We discussed whether we wanted him to come back, and clearly we didn't. He was in the wrong job, doing the wrong work. This is a very busy office. Maybe if we were a rich organisation with very deep pockets, we could have got a one-to-one assessor to work alongside him. But as a charity for older people, we didn't have the resources." Recording a verdict that Eddie intended to take his own life, Senior Central Hampshire Coroner Graham Short said his departure from Age Concern played a part in his suicide. He said, "I do believe his resignation was a blow to him, and I do believe it did set him back. I think that it had the effect that he was no longer in a supporting structure. He had plenty of time on his hands, time to dwell and think about his future. Although the loss of his job didn't directly lead to his death, I do believe it was a contributory factor in his thought processes."
Sally Army stalwart Peter dies. A Salvation Army volunteer who spent two decades taking donations in Winchester city centre has died aged 84. Peter Dickinson became a well-known face braving all weathers to sell the war crime magazine around the high street and outside Sainsbury's in Middlebrook Street. He was the eldest of three children, born in 1929 and raised in Devizes, Wiltshire, later moving to Cheriton in 1964 with wife Pam. Due to moving house and a sequence of church closures, Mr. Dickinson was at various times a member of the Congregational Church, the United Reformed Church, and the Methodists. When the chapel at Cheriton closed, he found his spiritual home at Winchester Salvation Army, where he enjoyed playing in the brass band. Paying tribute, Terry Patterson of the Winchester Corps said, "I remember him as a man of great integrity. He was a quiet man at times, but a marvellous gardener, and somebody you could always rely on."
City model still in search of a permanent home. It is the 15-feet model of Winchester, as it was in the 1870s. And last Saturday, the city came together to thank its creator. Roger Brown, aged 90, worked tirelessly for 9 years on the replica, which is yet to have a permanent home. On Saturday afternoon, around 30 people gathered at the Great Hall, where the model was displayed, to thank Mr. Brown for his efforts. Among them was Chairman of Hampshire County Council, Colin Davidovitz, who said it was a truly wonderful legacy for Winchester, and called on the Hampshire Cultural Trust to help find it a home. When Roger retired, he spent 9 years putting this together, and I think it's a labour of love, he said. It is Winchester as it was in 1870. The thing is, we don't know what it looked like 1,000 years ago, but 1,000 years' time from now, people will look at this model and see what it looked like back then. The only difficulty we have is a permanent home for it. Mr. Davidovitz said that thousands of people travel from across the world to see the replica, which has now been returned to a council office. Mr. Brown, a former county council planning officer, joked with the crowd, saying, "Every time it is taken apart, another stress line appears on my forehead. There is damage each time." Efforts to house the model in the Guildhall, North Walls, and the North Transept of the Cathedral have all fallen through. It has never been permanently displayed due to its size. Michael Carden, Vice Chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, said it would be a popular tourist attraction and could have added audiovisual if a home is found.
Market Town comes second. Bishop's Waltham has finished runner-up in its quest to be named Britain's best market town. The medieval town was shortlisted for the Great British High Street Award last month, but lost out when the results were announced last Saturday. Local businesses and civic chiefs were hopeful of claiming the gong against the odds, as the town, population 6,500, competed against rivals more than three times its size. But Belper, in Derbyshire, took the Market Town and overall High Street of the Year trophies home to its population of more than 20,000. Judges praised Bishop's Waltham for its community collaboration, strong identity and use of events to bring footfall to the High Street. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury said, "Although Bishop's Waltham didn't win, it can feel justly proud of getting to the final stages of the competition, and I congratulate everyone involved in a great campaign. Bishop's Waltham remains a great place to visit and shop, and I'm sure it will continue to go from strength to strength. I also hope the competition will act as a reminder that this sort of high street is now rare in Britain, and everything should be done to cherish it." The awards were set up by the government this year to celebrate and reward high streets which are under increasing threat from online retail and national chains. Bishop's Waltham's application for the prize centred around the work of its town team, a joint venture between businesses and civic chiefs launched in 2012 to protect local firms after Sainsbury's won planning permission to build a superstore on the outskirts of the town. Tony Kippenberger, chairman of the town team, said, "We are really excited that Bishop's Waltham has been recognised as having such a great high street. Everyone has pulled together to make it such a success, and we now look forward to building on this in the future." Despite its small size, the town still has a butcher, baker, a greengrocer and a fishmonger, as well as more than 40 other independent shops. Fishmonger Peter Atkinson said, It's a great result, although we would like to have got first place. We've got a healthy economy, and I think people are looking at it as a destination to get to. It's nice to see the town thriving, and we are going through a good phase at the moment.
And on a similar theme, city ranked in top 50 retail centres in UK. Winchester reaches number 35 in the Vitality Index. Winchester has been ranked in the top 50 centres of retail specialist Harper Dennis Hobbs's new Vitality Index. The list was compiled to rank the top 500 British retail centres by scoring the quality of the retail offered rather than just the size, seeing Winchester come in at 35, just one ahead of York. Hobbs's index claimed the retail spend potential of the former capital is £410,707,986. The aim of the index is to provide a quarterly benchmark for occupiers and potential investors. The strength of the high street is a matter of some debate with the Silver Hill redevelopment in the pipeline. Centres that came in at the bottom of the list were Morecambe, Llanelli and Dudley, the last of which scored a vitality score of just 5 out of 400, whereas Winchester scored 159. Catherine Turness, Winchester Business Improvement District Manager, said, having just received positive statistics in the latest Business Barometer report, it's pleasing to see that this new data supports our findings. Winchester is flourishing, with a high street vacancy rate of just under 4%, and confidence levels amongst businesses is at plus 8, on a scale that stretches from minus 10 to plus 10, the highest recording since the beginning of the survey 2 years ago. Our conversations with commercial property agents suggest that there are companies interested in the premises currently available within the high street, but the complexity of national company liquidations, which is the reason behind the majority of these vacancies, sadly means it takes longer than we would like to get them filled.
A volunteer honoured for 61 years of service. A Winchester volunteer who spent 61 years serving a medical charity has been awarded one of its highest honours. Celia Streeter of Tegdown Meads was invested as Commander Sister of St John Ambulance at a London ceremony in recognition of her service and dedication. The 69-year-old was invested by Prior and Chairman of St John, Rodney Green, on the behalf of the Queen, who is Sovereign Head of the Order of St John. Mrs Streeter joined Winchester City Nursing Cadets aged 8 and returned to run the organisation for 25 years. She also spent 12 years as an on-call child protection officer. The investiture was a very proud and traditional occasion, she said, but she stressed that she only does the job for the good of ordinary people. I just enjoy doing it, she said. If you can help the young people, even just put a sling on, I think you've done someone some good. She added that she never planned her decades of service and simply fell into it. Young people went to the Guides and the Boy Scouts, she said. I just went to St John. I suppose you just come into what I call the St John family.
Hope for rec campaigners. Parkland may escape new build. Winchester civic chiefs look poised to drop plans to build a new leisure centre on part of a city park. A large chunk of the cricket pitch at River Park was last year earmarked for a new leisure centre, sparking strong opposition from local people in the Hyde area. Now the idea of using the field, tennis courts and artificial pitches north of the River Park Leisure Centre appears to have been dropped from options to be recommended to the Council Cabinet on December the 3rd. Campaigners welcome the news but are reluctant to celebrate just yet. Sir Anthony Walker, chairman of Save the Rec, said, "Our reaction is two cheers. It is too early to pull the champagne corks, as sometimes perverse decisions can be made." Sir Anthony said although the council officers were recommending it to be dropped, the councillors may disagree. He added that celebrations are on hold until there is a clear cabinet decision and endorsement from the full council. We are in a campaign, he said, where battles can be won and lost. We have won a battle, but the campaign is not yet finished. The cabinet will consider various options for a leisure centre, including a rebuild on the existing footprint, a refurbishment of the RPLC, or new building on sports fields in Bar End. The Save the Wreck campaign has been battling the plans for a year and in May staged a fun day on the park which attracted around 3,000 people, including rock star Frank Turner, who judged a... Council leader Rob Humby, in a written answer to a question from Councillor Jane Rutter at full council last Thursday, said, "If the City Council decides to go ahead with the replacement of the RPLC, it will be one of the largest capital projects the council has ever undertaken and will have financial consequences for many years to come. The council literally cannot afford to make the wrong decision." He said it was difficult because there is no consensus as to the answer. Even without site acquisition costs, a new centre will cost at least £25 million, more if a 50-metre pool is included. Councillor Humby declined further comment when asked by the Chronicle.
Concern over drug users in city centre. Meeting told people will die if no action taken. Deaths are inevitable if police do not crack down on drug abuses in Winchester city centre, a meeting heard. Vagrants and heroin users are a danger to themselves as long-standing problems with drug abuse in North Walls and Upper Brook Street continue, a Police and Communities Together meeting was told. It comes as it was revealed around six street drinkers have died, including suicides and drug overdoses this year. Residents said a secluded corner behind Holy Trinity Church is a hotspot for heroin abuse and antisocial behaviour. One aggrieved resident of Marchant's Place said he recently saw an intoxicated man escape death after running into North Wall's traffic. He said, "When he saw the chap that was lying down in the road, I thought he was dead. Then he ran headfirst into the traffic. He was inches away from death, but I couldn't stop him because I'm just Joe Public. It's going to happen, guys. We can't do anything about it." PC Joe Zubaydi said, "Vagrants are attracted to Winchester for its support services, but many are not truly homeless." He said, "Most of them have homes paid for by us, the taxpayer, and then they go out and beg. We don't want them to loiter, but we've become almost a bit Nazi-like if we tell people they can't be there if they're looking a bit scruffy. It's not an offence." But he said drug law was a bit perverse because officers could only arrest users if they had hard evidence of possession. The Chronicle recently reported how benches have been removed from outside King's Walk to deter antisocial behaviour. "We know people take drugs," PC Zubaydi said. "Winchester gives lots of people lots of help. It's a strange system, but that's how it works." Sandy Vining of Neighbourhood Watch urged residents to report all antisocial behaviour to the Help Police, build up a picture. Police and Community Support Officer Tim Wilde said that around six street drinkers have died, including suicides and drug overdoses this year, but they've been replaced by more arriving in the city. "We say if you're going to do these things, do them out of sight," he told the Hampshire Chronicle after the meeting. "We don't want to bully people. People complain about cyclists and footpaths in this town more than they do begging. That's the truth." The groups from King's Walk have relocated to Lawn Street and a bench on Lower Brook Street, it was revealed.
Good heavens. DJ Chris scores with goalposts. When Winchester schoolboy Toby Ferguson told Radio 2's Chris Evans Breakfast Show how his school's goalpost had been vandalised, Little did he know that the broadcaster would turn up in person with some new ones. Last week, Toby was joined by excited pupils at Week Primary for a kickabout with a celebrity to test out the new posts. 9-year-old Toby called the popular radio show's Kids for a Fanfare feature to tell the DJ and his millions of listeners about the school's predicament. Not only did Evans deliver the posts, but he is also sending the whole school to next summer's Children in Need Car Fest South event at Leverstoke because of the huge number of calls his show received from people offering money and to help. Toby will also be opening a special mini-fest called Goalfest at the Extravaganza. For 18 months, pupils had been using their jumpers and even lunch boxes as makeshift posts before Evans intervened. But he said it was Toby's sweet plea that got the phone ringing off the hook with people offering to help. He called me and I said, what was the score of the last match? And he said it was nil-nil, because our goals are so small and the old ones got vandalised, Evans said. I said, that's terrible and it's not fair. I said, we have got to do something about it. And the phone wouldn't stop ringing. Within a matter of minutes, hundreds of people called in offering money. Toby said, I don't know what to say. I didn't think it would get this far. Now we can play a proper game of football. The £600 goalposts were donated by Mark Harrod after he heard Toby's phone call. His colleague, Pete Robson, said it just tugged on everyone's heartstrings. And there is a colour photograph showing Chris Evans standing in the middle of the goalposts with primary school children in front of him, amongst whom are several girls. I suppose a trend for the future Olympics.
Villagers say no to housing development. Kingsworthy cannot take any more. That was the sentiment of scores of villagers as they viewed proposals for up to 50 new homes. The City Council and developer HAB Housing showed ideas for building off Loveden Lane at an exhibition on Monday. Villagers say they fear it will take too much space from recreation ground Eversley Park. One Springvale Road resident, who asked not to be named, said building there would be a travesty. She said they should just leave Kingsworthy alone. We have had so much development here and I've had enough. That park is one of the best things here. How much more is Kingsworthy about to take? Enough is enough. David Wolford, a land surveyor of Sycamore Drive, said, I understand we have to have housing. The infrastructure of Kingsworthy won't take much more. Winchester City Council's head of planning, Steve Opechich, was present, as was Parish Council Chairman Stuart Newell and Parish Council Chair of Planning and Highways, Ian Gordon. Mr. Gordon said, the main thing is that there was something circulated which misled people to think that the football pitch was going. But none of that was cast in stone and not sent round by any of us. Last month, Mr. Newell said, the parish council would not have supported any scheme which adversely affected the excellent sporting and fitness facilities that exist there. The parish council voted to support building off Loveden Lane earlier this year. The exhibition comes after a noisy meeting last month with an alternative developer, Drew Smith, which wants to build on land off Hook Pit Farm Lane, known as Top Field. Under the City Council's Local Plan Part 2, 250 homes are required in Kingsworthy by 2031, and 22 are yet to be allocated.
Buskers disturb churchgoers. They're the small boxes that make a big noise. And if you're a regular shopper in Winchester High Street, you can't miss them. Whilst mobile amplifiers are clearly doing the trick to get pennies in buskers' pots, it seems not everybody is pleased about the added noise. Churchgoers at St. Lawrence in the square so they are occasionally disturbed during Sunday service by buskers near the Buttercross. Reverend Canon Cliff Bannister said, "It's not a major problem, but most of us are aware on a Sunday morning of buskers using amplified music. It can be quite loud, and we've had to ask them to turn it down and not play during the service." He said, "Whilst no further action is being taken, if the problem gets worse, the church may look to help enforce a bylaw which prevents buskers from playing within a certain distance from places of worship during services." The issue was highlighted nationally when services at Bath Abbey were stopped by buskers' noise pollution.
Water supply cut off by neighbour. Villagers near Cheriton say they are outraged after going without drinking water for nearly 2 weeks. Hockley cottages were originally supplied by neighbouring Holden Farm, but were cut off on October the 31st. Residents say it has been a living nightmare. Although they can use their toilets and showers, three homes remain without drinking water. Kennedy Goddard, aged 56, says he and his wife Lynn were served no official notice and have installed their own borehole in their garden. It is shared with next door, Kathleen and Michael Beer, and Kathleen's 94-year-old mother, May. Mr. Goddard said before the water is deemed safe to drink, it must be tested in a laboratory for 2 weeks. "I'm at the end of my sanity with it. I would build up a head of steam, but I can't because I have no water," Mr. Goddard said. "We are high and dry, and the council and police can do nothing. It's a basic human right. Imagine being 94, housebound and with no water. I think that's cruel. Imagine if that was your mother." Susie Corbett, who runs Holden Farm with husband Charlie, said she has done all she could prior to the switch off, which she says has been planned since early this year. The four homes were once farm cottages but are now privately owned. "I was told that the cottages' boreholes were all up and running," she said. "Environmental Health checked it and gave me the go-ahead. The solicitors gave us the go-ahead. The contractors gave us the go-ahead. What more can I do? They never rang me up to say it wasn't going to plan. It's a very difficult one when you have complied with all the regulations. A private water supply does not have to supply other private people. Those private people have been given 6 months to get their own water supply." A Winchester City Council spokesman said it was investigating, adding, "It is clear that there has been a long and complex relationship between the suppliers of the water and users at Hockley Cottages, and it is regrettable that the water supply was terminated before the users had secured an alternative supply. Until the completion of its investigations, Winchester City Council is not in a position to make any informed decision on whether any formal action is necessary or in the public interest."
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who are Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.